stories online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see, I did it written in paint where you just painted.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is, and on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, could a paranormal phenomena be the cause of a phantom forest fire? A business trip leaves a man apparently sharing a hotel room with a ghost. A group of friends try to taunt a spirit to show itself in a house where a mass murder took place. And it's not often that you get confirmation of the ghost that haunts your home actually lived there once. Huh.
Yeah.
It comes full circle. It's not just, I wonder who this is.
Mm-hmm.
Those stories today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm alive.
You're better than alive.
I am better than alive. I'm really feeling fine. It's just this stupid cough thing that doesn't go away.
Okay.
I'm haunted. I'm haunted by the phlegm.
Ew.
The ghost of the phlegm.
I hate that word.
I know. I hate that. You know, a word I hate worse is loogie.
Yeah.
Remember that? Like, oh, you know, so-and-so can hawk a loogie. You know, and then the kids that would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't spit very well. So I was always very left out of that boy circle of hawking loogies at things as they would do. And I think the issue is I can't curl my tongue. I think that's like needed. No, it's not part of the...
I don't think so.
I thought it kind of like creates a launching pad.
I'm not sure on... I mean, that's a special talent, somebody that spits that way, but...
I don't know how...
I don't think so.
I just could never, like... Anytime I tried to do that, it would just... It would all come out, it'd be drip, be just gross.
Drool like a toddler?
Yeah, I would be. I look like a toddler, so I didn't even try it. I just like, nope, I'm good. You can spit, you know.
Okay.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, ladies, guys, when they're probably like early teens or younger, a lot of joy out of spitting at things for whatever reason. And... I don't. It's like it is. It's like a weird competition. It's like who can spit the first. I don't know why, but this is the world that I grew up. Maybe it's a Wisconsin thing. I don't know. I just remember a lot of kids doing it, and I couldn't participate.
It's gross.
Very left out. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. You can also write it on our website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Or if you want to record your story using your mobile device with a recording app of your choice and email us that audio, you can email it to tony@realghoststoriesonline.com. That's the way it works. Let's go to our first story here of the day. And our first story today comes into us from Jade. And Jade writes in, greetings, Tony and Jenny. My name's Jade. I'm from Missouri. Grew up in Joplin, which has this neat little thing called the spook light, a thing that it seems everyone there has had some experience with. A few stories concerning it, but a whole lot more interesting ones from when I was in high school. I've always been open to things beyond the known of this world. I am pagan and feel like I'm connected to the world. It may be due that while I may not see spirits, I can usually feel if there is something there, especially if it is a darker entity. So I have a lot of stories which I'll eventually love to share with you all. To start, though, I'll start with a spook light. It is, after all, the start of my journey, and those are a lot of people in my hometown. I went to a friend's Y2K party, the end of the world, and she and her dad and grandmother planned to take all of us to the spook light for a bit of fun. Now, the spook light used to be on a deserted dirt road. It has since moved to another road. At a time, there were not really any houses out there. Bit of history, this phenomena has been studied by scientists. They cannot prove what it is. It's been there longer than the highway, so it's not a car light. For a while, they thought it is or was gas catching fire, but they could not find it. It's simply supernatural. Anyway, while we were out there, we all got out of the car to look at some glowing worms or something on the ground. This friend was really into science, and her grandmother and father both shared her interest. I, on the other hand, did not like bugs or worms. So while they and the other children looked at the strange things on the ground, I hung out next to the car while we all stood there. We noticed a light in the distance. It was coming towards us. At first, we were thinking that it was a car, but there was only one light, and it seemed too high. Then it started moving weirdly, bobbing. We all climbed back quickly into the car and started to drive away, and the light followed us all the way back to the highway where the father's car was waiting. We were all stuffed in the back of the grandmother's, and that is when it vanished. My mom had an experience when she was a teen there. There used to be a house out on that road, a museum dedicated to the spook light, and there was a man that lived there that everyone called Spookies. While my mom was out there, it looked like the woods surrounding the area had caught fire. My mom freaked out and raced her car down to Spookies, and she drove the ball of fire. It seemed to roll through the woods, catching more of the woods on fire. She was shocked that no one had yet seen the huge fire and called the cops. When she got to the house, she jumped out of the car and ran to the door and started banging on it. Spooky opened the door gruffly and glared at her. She explained that the woods were on fire and he needed to call the fire department. His glare turned into a smirk and he said not to worry about it. Evidently, she wasn't the first person to see fire and freak out. She went back to the car and looked into the woods and nothing was wrong. The fire was gone and nothing was charred. As I said, I have so many more stories, but I'll wait for another time. Since I'm so open to them and people tend to tell me their stories too, I'll share them too, leaving out names since they don't belong to me. Love your episodes. Almost caught up. I listen at work, forcing my coworkers to listen. Also, blessed be Jade.
Now, I know we've talked about phantom lights or the light phenomenon, mm-hmm. but this was different in that it seemed to follow them.
Yeah.
It wasn't just there and then gone. It actually seemed to almost have like a level of intelligence with it.
Is that what it typically does? Or for other people who see this, is it like off in the distance as a mystery light?
I've never even heard of this light before.
No, I'm just wondering because obviously it's like a local thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if this is something where that's an occurrence where it's like, oh, we see it off in the distance. It's that mystery, spooky light. Or if it's stories like this where people are up there and then it's following. Obviously, there's two here where it seemed to follow.
Sure.
One seemed to do more damage than the other.
Right.
But I wonder how that goes.
I don't know.
Or what the average story is on the spook light. My only thoughts that if you're trying to find a logical explanation for it and if they thought it was or is some sort of gas, what if it is some sort of gas or something that is in the air?
Mm-hmm.
And what if it is something, it's like a gas that's naturally coming out of the ground or whatever, and it's also messing with people when they're there, hallucinating, thinking you're being chased by a ball of light, and the forest is on fire.
Could be.
You know, I wonder how much of it could be that, or if, you know, maybe there is like the legitimate light that is emanating from time mm-hmm. to time because of the gases. And then you get up there and you investigate, and then that's when it gets really weird is because of the consumption of the gas, you start hallucinating these other things, including possibly the ball of light more so than just what naturally occurs. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
That's really interesting.
It's kind of, you know, like the thought of, you know, the carbon monoxide in the house.
Sure.
Except it's naturally occurring in nature there. I don't know. It's really interesting. I'd love to hear more about that. I'm sure there's other folks who listen who know exactly what that's all about. So if you have a spooky or spook-like story, do share. It'd be kind of cool to hear more about that. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. By the time this thing airs, you're probably already well aware that I've been doing the Facebook Live stuff. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool because I was talking about, like, we're buffered ahead on our episodes by a week or two. So when we're able to do the Facebook Live, it's kind of cool because we're able to talk about right down to the day, you know, minute current things that are going on. If there's something somebody wants to talk about in the world of ghost things, it's there to talk about.
Sure.
So if you want to interact with us on that, I kind of do it somewhat randomly throughout the day. I've been trying to give a little bit of heads up as to when I'm going to go on to Facebook Live. I also stream it now on YouTube at the same time. I found out another way to do that. I have two computers actually going in here at once with two different cameras. It's really a lot.
Uh-huh.
I just do it at the same time and simulcast it. So on YouTube or Facebook, whatever platform you like, those are ways to watch those live conversations. And they kind of start out with that. My thought of I'll do this for like 10, 15 minutes. And both times now that I've done it, it's been like well over an hour of just sitting there talking and answering questions. So you can ask questions about the show or anything you want on the Facebook Live stuff. So to not miss out on it, make sure you are already liking us on Facebook and you are subscribed to our feed, so you don't miss out on any of that as we do that. And we'll do one together.
Someday.
Someday. I was trying to figure it out today because it's like a little box you get. It's not like a widescreen shot that you get. So I'm like, how are we going to fit on here? Because I guess we sit back further.
Yeah.
I think we can make it work. So anyhow, it will be fun. They always ask where you are.
I know.
And I make something up like, oh, she's harvesting apples in the backyard, or, you know, I don't know. So there you go. Everybody writes in to Real Ghost Stories Online. Is this Nogales? Nogales?
Nogales.
Nogales. Dirty Ghost Story by Greg Beck Fort Worth. There should be a by Greg Beck, Fort Worth, Texas. Okay.
Okay.
This is him telling us his story. Okay. In the mid to late 1990s, I owned a Texas-based national general contracting company serving large big box stores like Kmart, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, etc. As the founder and CEO of the organization, it was my job to represent the company to our clients. It was one of these occasions where I was required to travel to Nogales, Arizona, to meet with the client's regional representatives to discuss a major upgrade project on their southwestern regional location. Basically, I was present to wine, dine, and assure them we were the company for the project. Pretty straightforward business as usual. Although I previously mentioned wine, please understand that I did not drink, do drugs, or have any psychological issues to deal with. That morning, I flew to Phoenix, rented a car, and drove there. Gallus is an old town that rests on the USA-Texas border, and I could sense a history and age as I drove through the town and up to the hotel I had booked. It was an older hotel, and its age showed but seemed clean enough to... And I took my bags to the room. At the time, I was carrying my laptop computer. This was days when laptops were large, clunky, and expensive, so I took very special care with it. I set the laptop and my briefcase on the bed and my suitcase on a rack in the corner. It was a mild, late afternoon, and I still had an hour or so to kill before I was to meet with the client for dinner at a local steakhouse. Pulled a cigar from my briefcase, set out to walk around the block to check out the area, smoked my cigar, and strolled leisurely around until I was finished with the smoke and returned to my room. As I unlocked and entered the room, I sensed something strange and immediately felt myself tensing and becoming on guard. I looked at the bed, and my heart sunk for a moment. My laptop was nowhere in sight. I checked the door to the back balcony and it was locked. I just knew it had been stolen. As I turned to head to the office to make a report, I saw my laptop propped against the wall by the bed. This was something I would not do. I picked it up, opened it, and felt a great relief, as all seemed okay. As I tried to rationalize what had happened, I considered the maid making a turn-down call. But frankly, this hotel was not that upscale, and the bed was not turned down. Had I left there and just did not remember? No, not very likely. I racked my brain and could not really develop a satisfactory answer. Time caught up to me and I had to leave to the dinner meeting. I left the hotel and soon forgot about the incident. We had a good steak dinner, dealt with business, and I was back in the hotel room by about 11:30 p.m. Soon I was off to sleep. And suddenly, around 1:30 a.m., I was abruptly woken by a sound. It was a loud sound of water running. I lay there looking up and thinking maybe this old hotel does not have adequate insulation and the person next door was taking a shower. But this sound was just too loud. I got up and went towards the sound. It was coming from my bathroom. I leaned into the doorway and turned on the light, half expecting to see a broken pipe or something similar. As my eyes adjusted to the light and my hearing to the sound, I realized the sound was in the bathtub behind the shower curtain. I pulled back the curtain and saw water gushing from the bathtub faucet. At this point, you might think it was just a sudden change in the water pressure or a faucet gone bad. Maybe I'd not turned it off completely and the pressure changed at night to make it run. First, I'd not used the tub or its shower. I usually shower in the mornings. I'd only use the sink to wash up before bed. Second, and most importantly, it took me 4 complete turns to stop the water. I guess whatever it was needed a bath. After a few minutes of contemplating this and earlier afternoon's event, I was not able to sleep for the rest of the night. The bathroom door was around the corner and just out of sight from the bed. I laid there watching that corner from the room until sunrise. I packed, left town, and never looked back.
You know, it almost sounds like whatever it was going about its normal activities of staying in a hotel room.
Sure.
Maybe it just didn't realize that it was dead.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it didn't even realize that anyone was even there. Mm-hmm. You know, the things like that, you have to wonder if it's even conscious of that or if it's some sort of, like, you know, time slip, maybe not even from that long ago, and it's, you know, it's somehow interacting with the same place and time, and for whatever reason, certain things are being manipulated in certain ways.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, very, very odd. I don't blame him for not wanting to go back. All I could picture in my mind, the hotel, you know, when you tell a story, you kind of, you know, make up the setting for it as far as what is it, what's a hotel look like?
Mm-hmm.
What hotel do you think was going through my mind as the setting for this?
The one in Lamar, Colorado.
Was it the Cow Palace?
Cow Palace.
The Cow Palace. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we stayed there on our family road trip the other year. Was it 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, from what I understand, it's like it was in the very beginning process of kind of being redone or renovated or fixed because it had many years of disrepair. It's one of those like where when we were kids, it probably at that time would have been like, ooh, neat.
It was.
You know, like it's an amazing place. And then a lot of those, what I call holodome type, because it had that dome. Was it a Holiday Inn at one point in time?
I think it was. And the whole atrium part was the pool.
Yeah.
They have made it so much smaller now, but it used to be a big pool. And,
sure.
And it was fun because I stayed there as a little kid.
Yeah. It very much reminded me of the type of hotels that, you know, we stayed in as kids with the holodomes at the time. And it's just like, what happened? But I kind of follow it a little bit, like out of curiosity, and like there's new owners in there and they're trying to fix it back up to its former glory. So I don't know if it has been done or not, but I remember the time when we stayed there, it was not quite there yet.
Yeah.
But that was years ago. So maybe things have changed. Nikki writes in, this story is made up of a few shorter stories about a certain place. So I apologize if it's really long. Here's some backstory. About an hour from where I live in New York, there used to be a small mining town. Truck back in the woods down a really long, narrow road. A lot of legends about the town, the main one being about a man who killed his family and then was hung for his crimes. Long story short, after a while, everyone slowly ended up moving out of town and it was abandoned. Years later, some rich person bought a ton of land out there to build an estate, and remaining land is now a state park, and all the buildings except one were demolished and removed. A few years ago, a bunch of my friends started talking about this old town and how the area was apparently really haunted, and that they were all going to go explore it late at night and record audio on their iPhones the whole time to review later for creepy stuff, which we did every time we went. The first time my friends went without me, a lot of weird stuff happened. In the recording, you hear one of my friends acknowledge that they started getting the creeps. And suddenly the radio station cut to play weird European techno music, and the girl in the back seat screamed and said something hit her ankle. Later they saw she had a small puncture wound there, which oddly never healed right and left a tiny black scar. They also saw a small handprint in the corner of the windshield. Too small to be any of theirs. Our third group trip, we took a few new friends, and as we turned into the road that leads to the town, we started telling them information about the adventure, including that the road was really rough, that there was no cell phone service after the pavement ends. Right after we said that, my friend who was driving received a text message, which we ignored until later. It's a pretty normal, creepy drive, and we didn't experience much. Ended up turning around after a while because it was really foggy and dangerous. And on the way back, we rolled the windows down and decided to ask the spirits questions. Again, we received nothing, which was surprising because some of my friends were being kind of rude after a while. On our way back home, we decided to review the audio recordings. They had a bit of weird static every once in a while, but we weren't sure if it was technological or supernatural. When we got to the part with the questions, we heard my friend say, "Won't show us yourself, huh? That's a tough guy after all for someone who killed his entire family." And immediately afterwards, you could hear very clearly right next to the microphone what sounded like someone very distraught, gasping a few times like they were trying not to cry. We all freaked out, and our hair stood on end the entire way home. The iPhone was held up near my friend's knees in the very center of the car, so there was no way it was any one of us. My friend driving then checked his cell phone to see the text he received earlier. And it was an unknown number saying, "Yeah, there's no service here." The house remaining on the road is extremely creepy, too. I've explored a lot of abandoned places. I won't go inside at night and very briefly during the day. Someone I know bought a Ouija board once and set it on top of his car. Went over to a bush to pee, and when he returned, it was nowhere to be found. I would have to guess the house was built in the early 1800s and sometime not long ago was almost remodeled. The interior walls are definitely modern, and there are electrical wires and outlets half-finished. The windows and front door were all cemented shut long ago. There was a really creepy attic that had a random pile of dirty clothes beneath the door. The weirdest part about the house, though, was the basement. It was only accessible from a big hole in the side of the house behind some bushes and a now-smashed trap door inside a coat closet. I don't plan on exploring that anytime soon.
That's creepy. It makes you think that they were fixing it up and something scared them so bad they just left it.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, it'd be a great little fixer-upper. Look at this old antique cottage, all the history, and oh, shit.
Yeah.
All the dead people that are still living there. Do you think if you're a ghost and you can choose kind of your setting and where you want to go to, whether you originally lived there or not, that homes in places like that would be attractive to them if you're a ghost that doesn't like people or doesn't want to deal with people?
I would think so. So you can just kind of hide out in your classic looking haunted house where people probably won't bother you.
We are, if you just kind of want like a home-like setting, mm-hmm. You know, not just like wandering the outsides, but, you know, I suppose, you know, either if you're still conscious of things, you'd still want some familiarity.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to deal with the people, that abandoned homes may be a good place to be.
But I think when you do have interactions with people, it's going to be people that are going to be there specifically to torment you.
Yeah, because you're going to be showing up for
mm-hmm. them. Yeah.
So you got to make sure you get to a place where you don't have ghost hunters.
Mm-hmm.
I would go hide out in that that development that's near Branson, that real creepy one. What is it called?
Is it Indian Ridge?
Because there's one that's, let me just make sure it's
either that or Indian Point. It's not Indian Point, because that's a whole area.
Yes, it's Indian Ridge in Branson. If you ever are in that area of the world, it's this defunct development that fell into very hard times and I think other issues shortly after 2008. But they built these monstrosity homes, like million-dollar homes, just big, and they look like castles.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there's probably like, 15, 20 of them down there.
Yeah, maybe.
And they're huge. And you're like, oh, wow. Then you take a second look and it looks like something out of The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one's ever lived in them. They're not completed. Their nearing completion is kind of where it ended. Like some had been, you know, fully, I think, almost done. Mm-hmm. And then some were a little bit more along the line. But they're just sitting down in this abandoned valley and you're just waiting to see walkers wander past them. It's really creepy. And if you're looking for interesting, abandoned, creepy things to look at online, just search Indian Ridge in Branson and you'll find plenty of creepy photos of very modern decay, because these are, you know, very not that long ago. I mean, we're coming up pretty close to almost 10 years, but gosh, it makes me wonder if anyone will ever be able to revive these things, if someone buys them or...
Well, somebody tried to, like, last year, because the sign says, you know, pre-leasing or whatever for 2015.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and I think it has not succeeded yet again.
Interesting. Interesting. I was just looking online. Oh, here's a new news story about it.
But they've never been lived in, so they're probably not haunted.
I wonder what the story is, because I'm looking at the news story on it, and I believe this was from last year, and it said they're hoping to finish up the construction, if I'm reading this correctly, and have them ready to be listed by July of this year. So I guess whoever purchased them, this was published in January of 2015, so I don't think that ever happened.
No, that didn't.
Wow. It's creepy. Creepy photos. There you go. Check it out. It's neat stuff. Let's go over to... our next letter. Taylor writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. Wanted to share my ghost story with you. My name is Taylor, and I'm from Ontario, Canada. From the second year to the fourth year university, I lived in the same house with five girls. Whenever people stayed over, they would always talk about how the house gave them the creeps, to the point where one of my closest friends wouldn't even come into the house. It wasn't an old house by any means, but it did give off some strange energy. We'd always hear creaks and sounds, but there was always something else that we could blame it on. One morning, I was talking with my roommate in the kitchen. My room was in the basement, and her room was on the main floor of the bungalow. She seemed a little disturbed and asked me if I tried to get into her bedroom last night while she was sleeping. She always slept with the door locked. I told her no, and she described that she heard my bedroom door creak open, which sounded like footsteps up the stairs, down the hall to her room where someone was fiddling around trying to open the door. After a few tires, she heard... steps and back down the hall and back into my room. I assured her that it was not me, but then we both shrugged it off, jokingly saying that maybe I was sleepwalking. After we made that joke, things began to get worse. One day, the same roommate and I were sitting and watching TV. We were discussing the possibility of a ghost in the house to explain all the weird things that had happened. Much of the similar stuff sounds like someone coming out of my room, up the stairs, and walking around. She absolutely refused to even consider the possibility. With that, the channels started changing on their own. At first, we thought the button was just stuck. As my roommate asked if that was the case, the volume started going up full blast and then to mute. Got up to turn the TV off, the TV itself, and it wouldn't turn off. Then the cable stopped working and it just loud, deafening static noise. Without any other options left, I just yelled, "Yes, we know you're here. Now please stop it and let us get back to watching Ellen." TV instantly stopped and went back to normal like nothing had happened. After that incident, I felt a presence around me grow stronger. The presence didn't scare me, but I knew it was there. I decided to name it Frederick. I would acknowledge him when I would come home and when I would leave, and things seemed to get better after that. Anyone who came over would tell me that we had a friendly house ghost named Frederick, and he liked it when you said hello to him. Everyone thought I was crazy, but it seemed to keep things under control. One night, it was very late, and another roommate and I were up studying for an exam. Everyone else was asleep. The house was locked up for the night. We were upstairs brewing some coffee, discussing Frederick. And my roommate questioned my certainty that this wasn't an evil entity in warning me that we should be careful being so willing to communicate with him. With that, we heard our front door click like it was being unlocked, then the front door fly open. My roommate and I, terrified, clung together to turn the corner to see if someone was standing there. There was no one there. Not sure what exactly happened there, but I can say I was almost relieved that there wasn't anyone there. I went over and closed the door and told Frederick that our house isn't safe if he leaves doors open, with no other explanation for how that could have happened. But the worst night was the night where we were having a house meeting. Again, we lived in a house with five girls. Arguments and drama was a regular occurrence. This was a particularly bad night. Everyone was arguing, lots of yelling. All of us were in the house, windows shut. We had a large garbage can in the kitchen. As tempers were at their peaks, the garbage can lid came off and flew across the kitchen into the living room, where we were all shouting as if it was thrown at us. That immediately shut us all up. I have since moved out of that house after I graduated from university. Find myself wondering if it was actually a ghost. Why he seemed to have such a stronger presence around me than any other of the roommates. Is it because I would acknowledge him? Why did he have these strange outbursts when people questioned his presence? I truly believe that he was not evil, and that if he did want to cause harm, he would have. Thanks for telling my story and giving me an opportunity to tell my story, Taylor.
I think it's because Taylor acknowledged it. That's why it seemed more comfortable around her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, that it probably threw fits when people doubted it. So that it, you know, was like, no, watch this stuff, mm-hmm. you know.
It was almost like when they opened the door, when someone's like, you sure it's not evil? And then the door flies open. Like, maybe it was just being an angry person. Mm-hmm. And like, fine, I'll leave if you think I'm so bad, you know. And then realizing, oh, I'm a ghost. And for whatever reason, I can't leave.
Sure.
It kind of reminds me of the story of the ride at Disney, the Pirates of the Caribbean,
mm-hmm.
where you have to say hello to him and tell him goodnight every day.
Mm-hmm.
For it to not have issues with the ride. Kind of the same thing, making peace with it and just kind of acknowledging you're there, and then it all goes smooth.
I wonder if a ghost minds when you give it a name and it's not its original name, but yeah. It's at least being acknowledged.
I don't know. It probably just depends on the personality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we would really suck if you get like a name you really hated in life or something. And like, that's what you're now called all the time. You think that that'd be the point where you're as a ghost, that's where you start writing it on the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what is this? Oh, okay. That's what we're going to change your name to now. Red Rum. Janet writes in, hello, Jenny and Tony. I've been listening to your podcast for over a year now. Became an EPP a few months ago and really appreciate all the effort you both put into making your podcast entertaining and fun. Today I had a story that included a black dog in the basement, and I remembered something that happened to me a long time ago and wanted to tell you about it. So here goes. This is a black dog story. 20 years ago, in the late fall after the harvest, I was working on my mother's family genealogy. Several of my great-grandparents were buried in southern Indiana, in some sort of small Catholic cemetery. The cemetery is on the edge of town, on a ridge overlooking the countryside, surrounded by cornfields. I was not very experienced, so I neglected to call ahead before I went to visit on a Sunday. That is important because there was no one there to help me. My error was thinking that all of my mother's family would be buried together. They weren't. I had a checklist of the names of the people I wanted to find and found everyone except my grandfather's mother, Ella. This bothered me a lot because she had been very dear to my mother when she was alive. My mother talked about her often. I walked the rows back and forth and did not see any stones with her name. I got frustrated and said out loud, "Grandmother Ella, I'm trying to find your gravestone. Please help me." As I said this, I noticed a black dog far off in the distance running in the adjacent cornfield. The dog was running in the direction of the cemetery. I watched it as it moved closer and closer, and while it was still a good distance away, I started to walk backwards, keeping my eye on the dog the whole time, as it appeared to be running straight for me. And as it approached the edge of the cemetery, it just stopped. At that point, I had backed up and was leaning against a very large marker, and I watched with relief as the dog turned and ran back to the cornfield. When I quit watching the dog and looked around, I found that the marker I was leaning against was my great-grandmother Ella's gravestone. Can't explain it, but it happened. Good dog.
Okay. If I were the grandmother and I was going to make a dog show my grandchild where my headstone was, I think I'd go more like with, oh, it's a little lost Yorkie running around the cemetery and you're trying to catch it, and then suddenly it disappears right where you're supposed to be.
Not the threatening large dog in the distance that
yeah.
may be coming to maul you.
Yeah.
And then you happen to just bump into the gravestone.
It's a neat story. It's
it
just,
is.
I don't like the idea of being yeah. scared and alone when the dog's there.
There's a crying Pomeranian that led me to your grave. I just made that up. Like that.
I know
a new
you
song.
Just made that up. I know you did.
Oh, it's a new song. We should find some music to actually sing that to.
Right.
We'll probably do that. Stand by.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
It could be a really touching song.
Come on, just read.
As we go, this could be a great song. This is a song that will probably...
I am going to leave.
No.
Just read the stories.
You don't
want to... I don't want you to sing.
I really think this could be a good song. I can't get the damn thing to play. You lucked out.
I did.
The ghost stopped the music. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Dear Tony and Jenny, this is Rachel from Southern Oregon again, writing in the second half of my ghost story. My first story was the one about the little ghost girl who had shown me her death in a dream in my old house in Dallas, Oregon. I had mentioned in that story that there was another ghost in this particular house named Charlie. Charlie had been a former owner of the house and had done a lot of adding on and construction to the house during the time he was alive. The story is about him. Just recently, I discovered what being an empathic is, and I am so grateful for the show and all I've learned about myself from it. All those years living in my mom's house as a teen with two ghosts, I knew deep down that the house was haunted, but my understanding of how a ghost can be perceived was lacking. I thought you can see ghosts or you can't. There's a very black and white view on it. I could always tell when I was being watched by something, and I couldn't say, but I never knew why. Just out of nowhere, a voice would sometimes come to me. It was usually a question, curious about what I was doing or had been doing. I would also get what I can only describe as rushes of foreign emotion, even when I was a teen. I had called it this. It always happened when I was in that house and nowhere else. I'd just be going about my day, focusing on the things that float around a teen's head, when I get a rush of emotion just flow through me. This emotion was never how I was actually feeling, and it would only last for about 10 to 20 seconds. The emotion was usually intense anger, as if someone had pressed an emotion button on me that said anger, and it actually would scare me really bad when it happened. It happened often enough that one day I asked my mom if she ever got rushes of emotion that just seemed to come from nowhere. I remember she looked at me like I was a freak when I asked her this, and she said, no. I spent most of my time out running around with my friends in Dallas as a teen, or would be in my room at my house. My room was in the upstairs part of the house, and being the only child in the house, it was more like the entire upstairs of the house was like my own apartment, complete with my own bathroom. My mom and stepdad almost never came upstairs, and I later learned that even my skeptic stepdad, who had turned the extra upstairs bedroom into his man cave, hated going upstairs and being in his man cave room because every time he'd go in there, he'd feel very creeped out, watched, and like he wasn't welcome at all. This room was hardly ever entered, and if you did want to watch a movie on the big screen in the room, you did not go alone. That was Charlie's room. Now here's where my empathetic abilities were working for me. Over time, I developed a mental image of who was making me feel watched, especially whenever I go to the bathroom or take a bath. The first time I saw him in my head, he was peeking his head in at me in the bathroom while I did my thing. He was a man with a very shallow, almost sickly look. He was a big man with dark, messy hair, and he was wearing overalls, kind of like a Paul Bunyan character. I think he may have been a logger or a miller, which is accurate to the time and place he was from, as Dallas was a very prominent area for the lumber industry. I felt like when he was alive, he had been a womanizer, a drinker, and hated kids. I gained all these details over a few occasions of feeling watched in the bathroom. Over time, weird things happened, and I think they are all Charlie's fault. Every morning, when I'd get ready for school in the morning, I would open the bathroom window. I'm pretty sure this window was a very, very old one because I've never seen one like it. It had the two pin-like things on the inside of the window pane, and you had to pull them towards the center of the window to open it. You could let the pins go in two holes halfway up the window pane if you wanted to keep it open. I opened this window every day while getting ready because the heat that came off the many old radiator heaters in the house would travel upstairs, and I'd be sweating my butt off if I didn't open my window in my bathroom. Once I forgot to shut the window, when I got home from school that day, I got screamed at by my stepdad for wasting the expensive heat. But it was no secret. My stepdad and I hated each other, and I could tell he really liked being mean to me. So I made the mental decision to never accidentally leave that window open again. I didn't want to get screamed at again. So every morning, I'd make a conscious effort to make sure my bathroom window was closed. That didn't matter, though. Every day after school, I'd come home and my bathroom window would somehow be open. It didn't matter how much I insisted that I had shut it, my stepdad would scream at me again. It was not cool. Then one day, I was in the bathroom, home alone, and the open window just slammed shut, breaking the glass within the pane. Also, I also had a cat named Scooter, who was like my own little ghost detector. I had had this cat since I was 5 years old. He'd been my best friend for most of my life then, and we were very bonded. My stepdad also hated my cat because he was allergic to him, so I had to put Scooter outside every day before I headed to school. When I'd get home from school or anywhere really, my cat would greet me with lots of affectionate meows, head bopping and massaging the floor beneath him. We would then proceed upstairs to my room for a good cuddle. Scooter usually ran up the stairs, just a few feet in front of me, but then he'd stop, dead in the doorway. His fur would fluff up real big and his ears would go back and he would start hissing and spitting before hauling ass back down the stairs. This happened more times than I can count. I always followed him when this happened too. A few months later, I had acquired a pet hamster. I love animals and I had set up a very cozy aquarium for my new pet and even got some sticker letters so I could write his name on his aquarium. I should also mention that I have a weird obsession with the name Charlie at the time. I'd sometimes call Scooter the cat Charlie with a British accent, just goofing off, but I liked that name, and that was a name I wrote on my hamster's aquarium with a sticker letter. I noticed every day that I had this pet, when I would come home from school, the letters would be on the floor under the hamster's cage, and the damn hamster would be out of the cage, gone. I'd find him wandering around the upstairs of the house every time, though. I eventually gave up on the sticker letters. They wouldn't stay no matter what, but my hamster was still getting out of its cage, even after I resorted to putting a heavy plywood board on top of the cage while I was gone. He'd still be out of his cage when I got home. I asked my mom and stepdad if they were playing tricks on me. They laughed at me and like I was just silly. There's no logical explanation, though. The thing that had happened to me is my beer bottle cap collection, which had a very neat display in neat rows on top of my computer tower thing, in my room would very frequently be all messed up when I got home from school, like someone had taken their hand and given them a good swipe. I put them all back the way they were just to find them that way, day after day. That happened for a few months. I asked the stepdad if he was the one doing this, but even I knew it was just silly. They would never remove himself from the sofa to do something so silly. Then the day came when I found my bottle caps all over the floor and I had enough. I jumped up and down on the floor to see if that could create enough vibration to move anything on my computer desk. It didn't vibrate anything. I now knew, and this was the first time I ever addressed out loud, what I knew at this point had to be a ghost. If you keep messing with my bottle caps, I'm just going to glue the damn things down. After that, my bottle caps only got messed with one time. It was when I was behaving very badly in life. I was partying a lot, and I just had my first experience with a Ouija board. This is not by any means a how-to on making a Ouija, but after playing a real one and becoming fascinated, I decided to show my twin brother, when he came to visit from Utah, how cool this thing is. We tried to draw one on a piece of paper, but it didn't work, so I got the bright idea to go to the library, which was just a 2-minute walk from my house. Looked up a picture of a Ouija board on Google, blew it up to full-size page, and printed it. Got back to my room, taped the paper Ouija board, the same plywood board that I used to cover the hamster cage. I then cut out a triangle from some cardboard and used a penny to trace and cut a hole in the middle. Needless to say, this totally worked, and I played with the thing every day, even after I went back home. One day, I had my very open-minded gay friend play it with me. We were communicating with two spirits that day. I was asking them specific questions like, how old were you when you died and what's your name? We got the name. Charlie was one of them. He said he was 92 when he died. The second name was Addie. They were 8 when they died. I never gave much importance to these answers then. A few days later, we played it again and I asked it the same question. This time it said it had never been alive. I asked it if it was evil, and it said yes. I then decided to end the session with a goodbye and put the plywood with the taped Ouija board under my couch in my upstairs living room, never to be played again. I should mention that there is an entire story that came from this Ouija. I may just record that and send it in. Moving on, you may remember my last story, that after I moved out of my mom's house, a relative and her family moved in and occupied my old room. This relative can see ghosts and is a bit psychic, and so is her husband and daughter. Anyway, she told me that at night she would wake up and see an old man crouched beside her bed, just staring at her face. She said he seemed confused. I think he was trying to figure out if she could see him or not. She said his name definitely had an R syllable in the middle of it, like Daryl or Charles. She and her husband were usually out of the house at work or school, but she said almost every day when she would get home from work, it would look like someone had come into the bathroom or the bedroom, taken her change jar, which was in a giant beer stein, grabbed handfuls of change from it, and violently threw it all over the room. She and her husband were also sleeping at night and were awoken to their 6-year-old daughter screaming. They had 2 children, and their bedroom was in what I had used as my living room when I lived there. They had what is commonly known as a bunk bed. I had to reach over to get it.
You didn't enjoy that too much.
And have it readily available. And the daughter that had screamed was sleeping on the top bunk. When asked what happened, she said through tears, "An old man is being mean to me." This sent the girl's father into a rage and yelled at the ghost something like, "You sick fuck, leave my kids alone or you'll be sorry. You're dead and you know you're dead and it's a privilege for you to be here. I can get rid of you if I want." I think much else happened after this. Just seeing a little girl in a nightgown in the dining room who would run through the wall into what would be my mom's closet downstairs. They decided to move shortly after and had a yard sale. My mom's. Now, being very close to the town center and the fact that it is a sunny summer day rather than usual dreary rainy day that happened in Willamette Valley, there were more people out on the streets than normal, many of which stopped at my mom's yard sale. One man in particular, who was very old, came up to my mom and relative who were standing together after establishing a conversation with them. He told them that his father, Charlie, had built almost half the house. I think he said it was sometime in the 40s, but I can't be exact. So that was the best proof of Charlie's existence. And all that time I thought I was crazy, very imaginative. What's weird to me, though, is that I never got the mental image of an old man looking at me when I lived in that house, which makes me wonder, maybe Charlie knew I couldn't see him with my eyes, so this was the image he portrayed to me. I don't know. Weird. The paranormal investigators that I later requested come check out the house said that when my parents had left and were eating dinner in the dining room downstairs, getting ready for dead time, they heard loud footsteps coming from upstairs in my old room. They came back with an EVP as well, of Charlie saying, "Just leave her alone." Sorry if this was long and boring and rambling. I really enjoyed writing it, and I hope all my fellow Real Ghost Stories Online listeners enjoy hearing it. I have other stories from a house in Utah that I was raised in. And it also has a haunting and demonic energies. It was a fun place to live. I can write in with those if you'd like as well. As always, thank you so much for my favorite podcast show. I feed off everything Jenny says about being empathetic. It's helped me understand so much about myself. Thank you for real. God bless you.
I know that was a long one, but
good.
I really like that the son eventually came by and just kind of confirmed that there was a Charlie at least that lived there. Now, I know that's kind of a common name, but, you know, I just can't help but think it's more than coincidence.
Well, what are the odds, really? Yeah. I mean, yes, of course it's a common name for mm-hmm. that era, but again, odds, mm-hmm. you know, and all of that lining up like that, I think it definitely all plays together to verify that there's something there. I'm guessing Charlie really didn't intentionally try to scare people.
No.
I think it was just kind of like curiosity, I'm still here, and naturally a child got freaked out by it, but it seems like it probably wasn't an intentional thing. It's like, oh shit, I didn't mean to scare you, you know?
I just completely got the mental image of Charlie looking like the cartoon old guy from Up.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I can't think of his name, but it just seemed like he was never happy, but he didn't really mean any harm.
Yeah, just kind of there.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally see that. I like that story. Thank you for writing in. And yes, we would like to hear your other stories about the other demonic place you happen to reside in. That sounds like a pleasant time.
Yeah.
So please do share. That wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like our show, please help us keep it on the air. Become an EPP extra podcast person. Up on our website at Real Ghost Stories Online. Get access to all of our bonus materials, all nearly 90 bonus episodes up there for you. New one every single week, exclusive video content, and more. And we're working on other exclusive video content. I actually got a good idea today submitted to us from someone I recently did an interview with.
Uh-huh.
And he's up in the Kansas City area about you'll love this, another haunted winery.
Okay.
But doing a show from there and, you know, interviewing, or maybe we were talking the other day off the air about doing more of the seeing ghost type stuff, combining, you know, food or wine and mm-hmm. ghosts. So that may be something for the future.
Okay.
It'd be kind of fun. I don't know. So lots of good stuff for EPPs that we put up there to really make it worth the $5 a month. Hope you enjoy that and continue to support the show so we can continue to do this thing called Real Ghost Stories Online. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.